It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your voicemails, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-272-9461.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do. And don't you ever forget that.
And now your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. I am extremely honored and pleased to welcome our guest, Miss Patricia Jamison, to the show. Miss Jamison, how are you doing this evening?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you, sir. How are you doing this evening?
I am doing wonderful as well. You know, I am really excited about the interview you and I are conducting tonight. This was one of the visions that we had in mind when we started Kennedy for Alabama. We wanted to create a forum where candidates could come, have a conversation with us, and get to the voting public their point of view that's not necessarily confined within a 30-second commercial. So thank you so much for joining us this evening.
Thank you so very much for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to come and share our platform and our heart with your listening audience.
Okay. Well, hey, before we get into a lot of the political questions, can you just take a moment and let everybody know, hey, where did you grow up? What did you want to do when you grew up? And kind of what you've been doing professionally before you transitioned into politics?
My name again is Patricia Salter Jamison, and I'm originally from Atmore, Alabama. I grew up in Atmore.
Okay.
And growing up, I wanted to be a physician. And that's because at the tender age of 15, I lost my father to heart disease.
Mm.
He was a veteran, but we lived in a rural area. He was a disabled veteran. And having access to the health care that he needed, not having access to the health care he needed, it led to an early demise.
Oh, wow.
And so with that happening, it just something in me just says, I'm going to do everything I possibly can to prevent anybody else, any other young people from losing their father or someone from losing their life due to heart disease. Mm-hmm. And when I entered high school, we had a vocational education program.
Right.
And I entered into the nursing. We had the nursing assistant training. And then after going through that for 2 years, I transitioned after graduating to a nursing school.
Okay.
And being a nurse, I came to Birmingham, and that's where I live now. Birmingham is my home. And I've worked for over 40 years in the nursing profession. And I became interested in politics. Well, also, let me back up. After being a nurse and taking care of the patient's physical needs, in 1998, I was called into the ministry. So Now I'm taking care of both spiritual and physical needs of the people.
All
and
right.
Now I have been called to take care of the entire being, the state. That same care that I've provided for patients through the years, I will be able to utilize those same skills as a nurse, the skills as a minister, and ministering and taking care of the state of Alabama. I would like to see the state being made whole.
Okay.
And I believe that that's my assignment, is to unite Alabama. Alabama United is my motto.
Well, thank you. Thank you for giving us that brief introduction to your background, as well as what was causing you to want to put your name on a ballot. So before I get into any of the political questions, please let the listening audience know that if they want to find out more about you, how can they contact you?
Okay, number one, I would like to invite you to visit my website, and you may do so by going to Pat Four, and it's the number four, patforgovernor.org. P-A-T, the number four, G-O-V-E-R-N-O-R.org. My campaign phone number is 205-807-0569. Our Facebook page is Pat for Governor. And if you want to contribute to my campaign, I would like for you to do so. There is PayPal, and you can do that on the app, well, on my website, rather. And then we have Cash App, and that's the $PATFORGOV. Go to my website, and you'll also find out a lot about me. You can also send me questions, and we will respond to your questions as quickly as possible.
Okay, well, thank you so much for that. We will circle back to that before we wrap up this segment. So now let's get a little bit into priorities. So if you're fortunate and blessed, and it's God's will, you end up winning the election and becoming our next governor, what are your priorities for the state of Alabama?
Well, my priorities for the state of Alabama, first of all, is livable wages. And when I say livable wages, I mean all of Alabama being able to work and take care of their households. So how would I implement livable wages? Number one, I would like to see the minimum wage increased. I would love to see raise the minimum wage. Number one, it's $7 an hour is not a livable income. I said 17, and some of my teammates are saying, no, we need to reevaluate that. So we're looking at right now what exactly would put us at a livable wage. And I also would like to bring in some industries and do economic development in rural areas where they've been overlooked. And if we bring those developments to those areas, it's going to increase the wages, which will also increase the taxes, which will lead us into improving our education system. In addition to improving our education, how I would like to improve it, number one is we're going to look at teacher retention by raising the salaries and keeping qualified teachers in the classroom, and not just the teachers, the support personnel. So if we are raising their salaries, there's no need for them to go anyplace. There's no need for them to supplement their incomes by working at the local Walmart or Dollar Tree or whatever. And I'm just naming off any other job, having a part-time job. Mm-hmm. And if we do that, but I would like to bring our education from the bottom to the top. Right now, we're 49th.
Ms. Jameson, can I ask just a couple of clarifying questions?
Sure.
So one of the things that we try to do here on Kennedy for Alabama is provide kind of a balanced view, just so that the listening audience can hear us kind of ping pong back and forth. And then ultimately they can come to their own conclusion. So there were two things I just want to clarify. The first is when folks typically talk about increasing the minimum wage to a livable wage, they normally have a number. I heard you mention something that I think was around $17 an hour.
You did.
Is that your advocacy $17 an hour, or were you just trying to give directional information that it just needed to be more than the $7.25 that it is now?
What I would advocate for is $17 an hour. Okay.
So,
and I know that that's something that we would have to legislate on, but that is my proposal. That should be a minimum.
No, I got you. So now the follow-on question to that, now that there is a number, is how do you get from here to there? So the Republican supermajority exists in both branches of the legislature right now. So it's one thing to have a point of view and an advocacy. There's another thing to actually go through the process of getting it approved legislatively. How would you do that?
Okay, thank you. That's a great question. Number one, we would have our team, and on our team, we do have an economist, and we would look at and bring back to the legislature when I make that proposal and show them that our people cannot live on $7 an hour and why.
Okay.
They cannot. Also, in showing them $17, some may not even be able to make it on $17, but $17 is better than $7. And I would like to, what I would show them is, okay, over the period of years, we've been here at $7 an hour, but we've raised our salaries. You've raised the legislature salaries too. So in order for Alabama to be able to take care of the citizens, we must and we have to do better. And I believe that if we come together and we sit down and we reason together, we can come up with an agreement for that. I just believe that it's time for us to unify and come together for the good of the state and not a political party, because the people are more important than the political party, or more important than me making a name for myself as a politician, but making a name for these, for our citizens. That's what we need to make sure of. And
thank you. Thank you.
I know you can hear me, because I really want the people of Alabama to do better. I've gone through rural areas and my heart has just, it's pulled at my heart to see people struggling and working hard and yet struggling.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for that. I really wanted to make sure that we had the opportunity to clarify what your advocacy was, as well as what you thought the path forward was to accomplish your advocacy. So the second thing you mentioned was education. And specifically, you talked about increased wages and benefits, with a goal of retaining not only our teachers, but also the support staff that makes the school system continue to run outside of the things that the teachers are doing in the classroom. So, yes, we have some rankings that are challenging. We have consistently been at the bottom. So how would you actually start to implement programs that would accomplish the two things you talked about, retaining talent as well as elevating scores?
And that's, I would do that, number one, by, I would put a task force in place, meet with the Department of Education, look at our schools. And what I would like to do is not just schools in one location, but all of our schools, I want them to be equal.
Okay.
And on equal playing fields, which means that, say, for example, in my city, I live in Birmingham, there are certain suburbs. If you move there, your children are going to get a better quality of education.
Okay.
As opposed to the inner city students, where the inner city students should be provided an opportunity, the same opportunity, the same textbooks, the same testing as the students in the suburbs. Well, I say, number one, let's you ask me how will we do it, I would say, number one, we're going to have the finances in order to improve the education. So I would like to institute the education, I would call it an education lottery, because that's what we would use it for. So where you don't have the tax monies, until we can get those incomes up to livable wages, at least have that money to fund the schools to meet the needs of each school, to bring them up. And when we bring in and we increase the salaries, I even thought about, I was looking at my plan and going over and just sitting down, we were strategizing, thinking about offering sign-on bonuses for the teachers and retention bonuses. And if we did that, preferably that would keep them in the classroom as well as increasing their salary.
So let me ask you this. So I'm following you on the part about the teachers and their salaries. And I understand how you would advocate obtaining additional funding through the process of getting a lottery bill through the legislature and to the ballot where people can vote on it.
Yes, sir.
The question that I have is, historically, the state of Alabama has not had the opportunity to vote on either a lottery only bill or comprehensive gaming legislation for well over 20 years. So how would you actually ensure that that's something that's voted on, so that you have that additional funding that you would need in order to continue to fuel your education agenda?
Thank you. That's a good question. And what I would do is put it before the legislature and really push for that to be done and show them the data from other states, because I've looked at the surrounding states. You know, we are surrounded by four contiguous states who utilize the lottery for education. And say, for example, you have Mississippi, they use it for education and infrastructure. All of the states that are surrounding us, those states, we have Alabamians going over contributing to their treasury. So I would say, let's keep the money in our state. Let the people vote. Put it to a vote. Let the citizens have the say-so. And let them vote on it. And if we have to call a special election, let's do so to get it done. And I think it's time out for us to stop just bouncing the ball from one year or from one administration to the next. And let's just do it for the sake of the people, because it will help. And I understand that we are in the Bible Belt. I'm an ordained minister, but I say that we can use the lottery. We cannot stop people from gambling. They're going to gamble if that's what they want to do. They're going to play the lottery if that's what they want to do. I cannot force my religious beliefs on anyone. So that's why I say, let the people say so.
Okay. All right. Well, you made me think of something else that I know people would want to get your point of view on, particularly given the fact that you've had a career in healthcare. Where do you stand on the issue of Medicaid expansion?
Oh, yes. I stand on the fact that it should be expanded, should have been expanded. It is overdue. So that's my take on it. And also, Mr. Kennedy, we had federal money allotted for expansion of Medicare, and Alabama's refused it and turned it down. And I believe, as governor, that you should be the governor of all people. And there are people who need the Medicare. They need the expansion. They cannot get the medical treatment they need because some of them financially can't afford it. And it's our responsibility as a governor to take care of the people. So I am an advocate for expanding it, for the expansion.
Well, thank you for that. I'll have one last question on this, and then we'll start to transition to the end of this conversation. So it's been the same thing that came up with the last two topics that we discussed. Although there are federal dollars that are available, there are some dollars that are going to have to come from the state. So when operating with a Republican supermajority, how is it that you get the funding to do the Alabama contribution to the Medicaid expansion? How do you actually go through and convince folks that this is the right thing for the state?
You asked me a very good question. And I must say that that's a difficult one because I can see myself standing before them, sir, and advocating for the people and letting the legislature know that we are here for the people. And that's why we are here. And as the governor for the people, I stand here speaking on behalf of the people, and I will not let that die. I will keep pounding at it and keep pounding at it until we can get that passed, because that's the only way we're going to rise above the low rankings that we have. That's the only way we're going to come out the pit and raise our state up to be that great state that she should be. And our people whole is advocating for them. So I would be an advocate. Do I think it would be easy? I know it's not going to be easy at all. But I'm willing and I'm ready for the fight, because I am for the people.
Okay, well, thank you so much for that. So we've got probably a little bit over 2 minutes left before this particular segment ends. Take a moment once again to let the listening audience know how they can get in contact with you if they want to learn more about your campaign or make a contribution.
You can go to my website, which is pat4governor.org. That's pat4governor.org. My number is 205-807-0569. That's 205-807-0569. And also you can go to my Facebook page, which is pat4governor. And you can also give by PayPal, and you can give by Cash App. The Cash App is $ Pat, F-O-R-G-O-V, Pat for Gov. And don't forget to vote for me on May 24th, 2022. Thank you so very much.
Mrs. Jameson, we have really, really appreciated having you on the show today. As I mentioned at the top, this was the vision that we had at the very beginning, allowing a candidate to come on, share their views, their background, their priority. We're not calling anybody any names or anything like that. We're actually focused on the issues and giving the candidate the opportunity to share their point of view with the listening audience. So, Ms. Jameson, thank you so much. We really do appreciate you joining us. And please be safe when you're traveling out there on the campaign trail.
Thank you, sir. You have a great one.
All right. And so with that, we are actually going to go to break here for a few minutes and pay a few bills. So we will see you back on the other side. You are listening to Kennedy for Alabama.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, Success.com. Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market. Specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications, Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.
Location, location, location. It's not just for real estate. At Kennedy Strategic Communication, location refers to targeting, how we maximize our share of voice within very specific groups of people. Just like location makes all the difference in the value of a property, so does strategic targeting and delivery. It helps our clients get the most bang for the buck because we don't waste time talking to the people who are not in their target market. Instead, we use the KSC targeting model to pinpoint exactly who we're trying to reach. With over 25 years of experience in corporate, nonprofit, startup, and political settings from coast to coast, Kennedy Strategic Communication is here to help you capture your best customers. Learn more at KennedyStrategicCommunication.com or call us at 334-544-0510. That's 334-544-0510.
It's time for Kennedy for Alabama, a political talk show where we discuss the real issues impacting our sweet home, Alabama. Your voicemails, comments, and texts are welcome at 251-272-9461.
I love this country as much, if not more, than you do, and don't you ever forget that.
And now, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
Good evening to the listening audiences in Mobile, Montgomery, Huntsville, and beyond. My name is Robert Kennedy Jr., and this is Kennedy for Alabama. Thank you so much for tuning in to today's episode. We're really excited about the program, so let's get to it. Tonight, we are fortunate and blessed to be able to have another candidate join us on Kennedy for Alabama. You know, one of the visions that we had when we started this program oh so many years ago was to create a forum where the candidates could come to you and communicate with you directly. We know that, unfortunately, sometimes it's hard to get direct access to the candidate because the state is so big, and the candidates do a lot of time traveling from one end of the state to the other end of the state. So we're hoping that as a Kennedy for Alabama team, we give you the opportunity to hear from them directly and ultimately make an informed decision about how it is that you want to cast your vote. So with that, I am extremely honored and humbled to welcome Dr. Will Boyd to the program. Dr. Boyd, how are you doing today?
Fine, sir. I'm more extremely honored and humbled to talk to you and people in Mobile and Huntsville. So thank you for this opportunity, sir, and thank you for all you do.
Well, you know, we couldn't do it if it weren't for candidates who are willing to put their names on the ballot. I know you have been on Kennedy for Alabama several times. as a candidate, as well as somebody who is offering commentary on the issues of the day. But a lot of our listening audience may not be familiar with you. So before we jump into the nuts and bolts of this conversation this evening, would you just take a few minutes and explain to folks, you know, where you grew up, where you went to school, where you went to church, and what you do in your profession?
Yes, sir. Well, I grew up in Florence, South Carolina, went to school in the Darlington County School District, where my parents both served. My mom was a nurse, but then I became a first grade teacher. My dad was a principal, went on to become director of transportation, and then actually superintendent of the district. I, of course, left the Darlington County School District after I matriculated through it, went on to the University of South Carolina, earning an engineering degree, and then course, you know, the master's and doctor's after that. My wife and I were married in 1998. We relocated to Illinois, and then we went on and did wonderful things. Long story short, we have a lot of work that we have our hands in, ministry, engineering work. My wife is the VP of HR for Books A Million. I serve as the pastor of a 162-year-old church, as well as a bishop to churches worldwide. Still using that engineering degree to help people from time to time, a little consulting here and there. And we have three children, one in college, one a sophomore in high school, and the other is 8 years old. I always joke and say she's going on 28. So that's it in a nutshell. But I'm running for United States Senate. I've served a number of positions, traveled the state alongside you, my friend, and just been trying to do what you're doing every day, sir, just educating people about what we need to make Alabama a better state to live in.
Okay. Well, let's just take a step back and ask some questions about the basics, right? So why is it that you want to be a member of the United States Senate? And if you are fortunate enough to be elected in the fall, what would be your top priorities?
One of my passions, as you know, is serving people. And I want to serve Alabama in a greater way. I want to run, obviously, in this race and do well. But my main goal is to reach the Senate and make sure I serve every Alabamian so they have a shot at the American dream. Of course, you know, there are three main roles of people who are in the Senate. They provide advice and consent to the president. They assist with the nomination process as far as approving any nominations that come across their desk, so to speak. And they time to time even are called upon to deal with impeachments, presiding over such trials. But for the most part, you see senators working alongside other members in Congress on the House side to make sure legislation is passed so that the people in their respective states and the country overall are off in a better place. So I want to educate Alabama and America, and I'll talk about that later on, build a better economy, make health care truly affordable for everyone, fight for voters' rights, and protect the environment.
All right. So, hey, if you get a chance, can you turn your volume down just a little bit and back up just a little bit from the mic? It is coming across just slightly pixelated. We can still hear everything that you're saying, but we just want to make sure we're protecting that sound quality if we can.
No problem, sir.
Okay. All right. So thank you for that introduction. So let's go ahead and spend a little bit of time talking about some of the issues of the day, and then we're going to move back and revisit some of your priorities. Does that work for you?
Yes, sir.
Okay, so the biggest thing on the international front right now is the war in the Ukraine. So take a few minutes and just kind of give the listening audience what your perspective is on that situation, how it has been handled so far, and what, if you're sitting in the chair, you would be doing differently?
Well, of course, as I mentioned, Article 1, Section 2, as it relates to foreign policy, is obviously what a senator is called upon to provide that advice and consent to the president. I believe that we have to have a multilateral approach to foreign policy. I believe force should be a last resort. I believe we have to provide support and resources to countries like Ukraine. I will say that I support everything that has been done to date. However, when you're dealing with a country where there is a dictator who has chemical, biological, and even cyber at his disposal, you have a whole lot that you really are facing at the same time. So with that being said, I support everything that we've done to pull up alongside NATO, provide support, even equipment. But I really would like us to do a whole lot more, because I really feel that we are seeing too many refugees coming out of this. We're seeing people who are displaced, and we really need to stop this aggression so that it doesn't spread even beyond Ukraine off into other countries in the surrounding region.
Understood. The other thing that folks speak a lot about right now, beyond what's happening on the international front, are two issues that are happening domestically. The first issue impacts everybody, and that's the issue of economy. You know that gas prices are going up and food prices are going up. What is your view towards what's happening as a result of inflation, and what recommendations or intentions do you have to help address the pain points that pretty much every American is feeling right now?
Well, again, I support what the administration and NATO has done to stop the aggression, the invasion, the killing of Ukrainians. And I mentioned the biological, the chemical, the nuclear, and the cyber issues. I do believe freedom, as President Biden would say, will always triumph over tyranny. But we've paid a price here. Not only that, Mr. Kennedy, we've had a punishing pandemic that we're trying to push our way out of. We've seen where people have been living from paycheck to paycheck. We've seen where there's been an increase in cost, as you mentioned, with inflation of food, housing, and gas. So I support what's happened with the American Rescue Plan, which provided economic relief, gave people, as President Biden said, some breathing room. It helped the working people get a little bit more on their feet. One of the things I salute about what's been done so far is in 2021 alone, we saw where 6.5 million new jobs were created. That was historic. I know people tried to look at the negative side of it. And we also saw where we grew at a rate of 5.7%, which is also the strongest in 40 years. So as we invest in America, educate Americans, as I said earlier, grow the workforce, build the economy, we've got to do it from the middle out, from the ground up. And I think as we continue to do that, we'll see where more jobs are created. We'll get the workforce back in where it needs to be, and that revitalization of America. But right now, people are still struggling. There's pain at the pump. And we need to do all we can to really end our dependency on foreign oil and look at ways that we can, again, address energy overall.
Okay, so I got to mess with you just for a little bit, right? So I understand the sentiment of what it is that you express and the qualitative support of the administration. So I'm not digging down on that whatsoever. But I'm still not understanding the how. Right. So if the food prices are high and increasing, and if the gas prices are high and increasing, and inflation is the root cause of both of those things, how are you taking actions either independently in collaboration with the folks in the United States Senate or as an influencer on the administration? What are you doing? How are you doing it to turn that in the opposite direction? Does that make sense? Kind of what I'm asking?
Yeah. What I just mentioned to you was the American Rescue Plan, how America was rescued with the breathing room. So moving forward, as I said earlier, the investing in America is what I keep saying first. What does that mean? That means revitalizing the American manufacturing sector. That means investing in electric vehicles. That means the 369,000 manufacturing jobs that have been created are good, but loosen regulations so that you can have more jobs. As it relates to inflation, one third of our inflation is because of auto sales. Okay. And it's because we have a semiconductor issue. The semiconductors, believe it or not, are causing a problem for us as it relates to the manufacturing, the assembly of new cars. So that's why car prices are going up. You notice even used cars are in such demand that they're going up in terms of price. So you can talk economics from a standpoint. I've been a business professor, as you well know, a dean, student success. But one way to drive down inflation is to, as President Biden would say, push down wages, and that would make Americans poor. We know that's not the way to go, right? So right. Biden has pushed for a better way is lowering cost and not wages. So how do you do that? You make cars and semiconductors in America. You don't rely on foreign supply chains. We've heard about the supply chain crises. We've heard about stuff sitting in ports. You're near port in Mobile, but port in California. You know how things are, getting containers away from the port back into inland. So what we have to do in the building a better America approach is cutting the cost of the prescription drugs, yes, but making sure we move again towards our our dependence being again on American manufacturing increasing versus that foreign dependence on other things happening abroad. And that's why we're getting in trouble right now. We also have to have what's called bipartisan innovation. There's a bipartisan innovation act that is resulting in there being an investment in emerging technologies and American manufacturing. You might have seen the last State of the Union address where companies like Intel want to invest $100 billion. So all of these things, coupled with the national network of 500,000 electric charging stations, making sure internet's all over America, that we're fixing 65,000 miles of highway and our 1,500 bridges in disrepair, making sure that we're using taxpayer dollars to rebuild America while buying America. That is how you bring inflation back down. Again, one third of our inflation is because of auto sales and what we're doing with the semiconductors coming from foreign countries.
I got you. So before I go on to the third issue that is top of mind with individuals, I want to just check off a couple of nuts and bolts for the listening audience to have a perspective on what your point of view is. So you talked a little bit about wages. So where do you stand on the issue of the federal minimum wage?
I believe we need to shoot towards simply speaking, a realistic minimum wage or a realistic living wage is what I would more appropriately say, especially as I'm a friend of labor. I believe, you know, it's a noble idea for people who are struggling right now to say, yeah, we want to be at $15, but I don't believe that's enough. I believe we need to aim higher. A recent study thrown out there showed that a person really needs about $32 to $33 an hour to do well. So even if we get to $20 by 2024, we're still going to see people lagging and falling behind. We really need to shoot towards that realistic wage.
Okay, so I'm going to push you on this one, Dr. Boyd, right? So I understand what the studies are saying and how those are calculated. It's really calculating the price of housing. And as the price of housing has continued to increase, there's an argument that the minimum wage needs to increase as well. But typically, when we have these conversations, we try to get a person committed to a number. So I understand the aspirational goal, but what is your number? What do you think the minimum
wage is? Well, I just threw out the number to you. Maybe you didn't hear me. It's probably a sound issue. I said $20 by 2024 is a noble goal to have, but that's still not enough.
Okay.
I think we need to shoot towards a realistic living wage. And right now, the numbers that are coming out there from some labor experts would argue that you need to be above $30. Now, we know that that's going to be a difficult climb. So I said $20 by 2024, I think is a very aggressive way to go right now.
Okay. So is that $20 by 2024? Is that all industry? Is that certain segments of the industry? And then similar to the question I was asking you before, if, you know, you're fortunate enough to be elected here in November, you're sworn in January, you're already less than 12 months from 2024. So how, how does it actually get through the process and get signed into law?
That's why I said I use the word noble idea. Again, we would love to aim for that, but we know right now that that is a very difficult climb. I think as we, again, approach the idea of what is realistic living wage number, what is that number, that's what we need to have as our target. It will change every year. Once we get to 2024, we're going to see $20 is not enough, as I keep saying. We need to work towards at least some goal, though. If we don't do anything, we're going to see more people fall behind. What I continue to see, especially in the hotel tourism industry, is that with this lower wage falling below $15 an hour, falling below $20 an hour, you're seeing where it's hard to retain good workers. Yesterday, as I was traveling back home from, or day before yesterday, as I was traveling back home from Montgomery, Alabama, climbing back into the Birmingham region and on to North Alabama, I stopped at one restaurant just to grab a drink, a sandwich, and believe it or not, we spent probably 30 to 40 minutes there. What should have been a 5-minute at max transaction, right, turned out to be an issue where we saw the pure collapse of communication between management and an employee. We saw where a person was obviously overworked, who was trying to work the drive-through, the front line, and work the kitchen. We saw a manager who had probably worked two or three shifts and was not in a place where she was really presenting her best to all of us as customers up front. And, you know, here I am having the management degrees and of course, the customer service experience like you have. I wanted to just offer advice, but I had to sit there quietly and watch what happened. But customers saw all of this fall apart. And a lot of this fell apart is because you probably have people who are making $7 to $8 an hour, and they don't know how they're going to make ends meet. They're afraid that if they lose their job, they're in trouble. They're the home earners. They're the primary earners. Probably a mother with two children at home, so she can't let the job go. So she's subjected to bad attitudes coming from a manager. The manager's probably in a position where she can't get workers to come in. Because, you know, in business, it's cheaper to retain old customers than bring new ones in. But it's also easier to retain the current staff you have rather than trying to go out and search for new ones. So she's trying her best to keep her staff together. And she has a skeleton crew because she's only working with one or two people per shift. So it's a big problem. And the way you secure all of this is, again, you bring wages back up to where they need to be. And it really does solve a lot of problems. It gives you retention. You don't deal with fallout, turnover, training, et cetera.
You know, it's interesting. One of the things that I think is a common misperception is that, particularly on the Democratic side of the aisle, that we all agree with each other all the time. And part of the reason why I wanted to issue those challenges to what you were saying was just so the listening audience can see us banter back and forth in private, in public, the same way that we banter back and forth in private. Right.
Exactly.
Thank you so much for sharing that. So, hey, one thing that I want to do before I go on to the next focus area is if folks want to get in contact with you, if they want to learn more about your campaign, if they want to make a contribution to your campaign, how can they get in contact with you?
They can contact me by going to www.drwillboy.com, drwillboyd.com. They can reach me by phone at 205-769-4422. If you just Google my name, Will Boyd, you'll see a lot of websites there that they can work through. Sometimes you'll see boydforbama.com. You can find me on Facebook at Dr. Will Boyd for Alabama. If you just type in Will Boyd, you'll eventually get there. Will Boyd for AL on Twitter, Will Boyd for AL on Instagram. So again, if you just go out and Google my name, I'm sure you'll see me there. Just tied into the U.S. Senate, and you can reach me anytime.
Dr. Will Boyd, I just wanted to thank you. You know, like I mentioned to you before, and like I mentioned to the audience before, this was the vision that we had in mind when we started Kennedy for Alabama. Just an opportunity for you to hear from the candidate directly. You have the information and know where you can find out more if you so desire. But really, it's ultimately about providing you with the opportunity to have an informed choice. This is Kennedy for Alabama.
What do business, municipality, government, and nonprofit leaders have in common? The desire to win, to fulfill the mission for the benefit of their customers and constituents. That's why they call us at Kennedy Strategic Communication. At KSC, we help our clients develop strategies for targeting and converting their target markets. We provide branding, public relations, marketing, advertising, executive coaching, campaign and political support, and other business services. With over 25 years of experience in corporate, nonprofit, startup, and political settings from coast to coast, Kennedy Strategic Communication is here to help you capture your best customers. Learn more at KennedyStrategicCommunication.com or call us at 334-544-0510. That's 334-544-0510.
Welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. Now, let's have a real conversation about what's going on in our Alabama communities. Once again, your host, Robert Kennedy Jr.
And welcome back to Kennedy for Alabama. For those of you who are listening during the last segment, we just had an absolutely wonderful opportunity to talk to Dr. Will Boyd, who is a candidate for the Democratic nomination for the United States Senate
here in the state of Alabama. You know, as I was saying earlier in the show, this is the vision that we had in mind when we started Kennedy for Alabama. We wanted to create an environment where journalists, elected officials, party officials, and most importantly, candidates could come onto the airwaves and talk to you directly. So during the last segment, that is exactly what Dr. Will Boyd did. You know, one of the things that is a little disappointing about where we are right now is the reluctance of some candidates, in particular candidates that are deemed as front runners, to actually engage publicly in discussion and debate. And we believe that this is a very good method for making sure that all of you in the listening audience get to hear from them directly. And once you hear from them, you can make whatever conclusion that you want to make. But I do find it a little bit disappointing that we haven't spent as much time emphasizing the need of our candidates to actually do that, though. So to all the candidates who have chosen to put their names on a ballot and to go through the proverbial ringer, if you will, as they interact with folks here on talk radio and in other forums, I actually want to take the time to say thank you. We really appreciate it. So with that, we're going to end this episode of Kennedy for Alabama, and we will look forward to talking to you in the days and weeks ahead.
Location, location, location. It's not just for real estate. At Kennedy Strategic Communication, location refers to targeting, how we maximize our share of voice within very specific groups of people. Just like location makes all the difference in the value of a property, so does strategic targeting and delivery. It helps our clients get the most bang for the buck because we don't waste time talking to the people who are not in their target market. Instead, we use the KSC targeting model to pinpoint exactly who we're trying to reach. With over 25 years of experience in corporate, nonprofit, startup, and political settings from coast to coast, Kennedy Strategic Communication is here to help you capture your best customers. Learn more at KennedyStrategicCommunication.com or call us at 334-544-0510. That's 334-544-0510.
This question is for all managers. How often do you feel like Charlie Brown's teacher when speaking to your team? With Coached Up, the snooze fest is over. Founder and CEO, speaker, and corporate trainer, Levy D. King III is the answer to attention competition. For 16 years and counting, Coached Up continues to transform messages into life-changing perspectives for his corporate, civic, and nonprofit audiences. Coached Up provides learning and professional development solutions for departments across entire organizations that align and develop with the best of their culture. Clients echo Coached Up by helping to improve collaboration, engagement, and foster team synergy, creativity, and innovation. To reclaim your team's attention and build your organizational culture, call Coached Up at 251-298-7615 or visit Coached Up on Facebook at Coached Up to Success or online at CoachedUpToSuccess.com. That's Coached Up, the number 2, success.com.
Ever wonder how some brands always seem to be right on target with the sweet spot of their market? Right on time and always top of mind. When choosing Dogwood Productions, these wonders become wonderful connections with your market, specializing in website solutions, new media strategy, and professional communications. Dogwood Productions has worked with some of the Gulf Coast's most prominent brands across many industries, including corporate, legal, hospitality, health, civic, restaurant, real estate, and the arts. And if you haven't visited Dogwood Recording Studios, make an appointment and turn that wonder into a wonderfully groovy experience. Call Dogwood Productions 251-476-0858. That's 251-476-0858. Or visit online dogwoodproductions.com for more information. Our customers agree. If asked, they could, should, and would do it again at Dogwood.